You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
To put it simply, we're both theater nerds.
So let's pull back the curtain and get a glimpse at the artist's process while creating their art.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Welcome, Mel.
Hi, guys. What's up?
Thanks for coming today.
Thanks for having me.
We're so excited to have you on here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
So Mel and I, we didn't go to high school together, but we went to the same high school.
We did indeed, yeah.
Yes, and we're from the same town and
yeah.
All that kind of stuff, so that's how we know each other. And
there's a lot of talent coming out of your area, man.
It's
come
weird.
On.
There's something in the water over there. I don't know.
We had Matt on the podcast a couple weeks ago.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yo, Matt. I feel like I saw him like a year ago or 2 years ago, a long time ago, but good dude, yeah.
So you started out as a child actor.
I started actually with commercials when I was like a little kid. I was like 3 years old when I signed with the manager that I am with today and work for today.
Shirley Grant Management.
Yeah, Shirley Grant Management. Whoa. So I met Shirley herself when I was like three because my great grandpa, he knew like one of the old managers who used to work there. She doesn't work there anymore. And he knew her, and he said, oh, my granddaughter, she's so cute, she never shuts up, you need to meet her, she's got to be on TV. So I went in for, like, an audition, and I didn't know what I was doing, because I was three. I was, like, grumpy and not having it, but they were like, well, it's Sonny's granddaughter, we'll send her out, we'll see what happens. And then I went in on, like, my first commercial audition and booked it, and then kind of been doing it ever since.
Because Shirley Grant is mainly a child actor.
Yes.
Management, yeah.
Yeah, they started... I'm going to get these years wrong, but, like, between 40 to 50 years ago, with, like, some heavy hitters in the beginning and stuff, and they got eventually led up to, like, they rep Rudy from The Cosby Show and Christina Ricci in the 90s and stuff. They discovered the Jonas Brothers. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Also from New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Wyckoff or something, I think.
I think they had a Willowbrook performance
they
many
did.
Years
indeed,
ago.
They did, yes. Fun fact, they were a Christian rock band before they before they became what they are today.
That's true.
Big shift.
So I have a question. So working as an actor while in school, how are you balancing that? And I guess, were you involved with theater in school at the same time? And how did that look for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I was young, it was like more commercials and things like that. So like elementary school, middle school, it was not really more than like a couple days at a time. So if I was missing school, they would have a tutor on set, or I would just get my homework and do it on set or after school or whatever. And then in high school, I joined the theater program, which was an awesome program at our school. And yeah, they were really good about accommodating, like if I had to leave for auditions or if you know, there was one year where I had to drop out of a show to do a movie, and they were like, whatever, like, have fun, good luck, that's great. and yeah, that's, so that was like when I shot the film when I was 16, I was out for 5 weeks of school, and so they had like an on-set tutor, and we had to like bank a certain amount of hours every week.
That was the movie you broke your foot?
Yes,
you broke
I
your
did.
Foot. That's such an interesting casting story.
Yeah.
Right, because the writers...
Yeah, yeah.
In the casting process, you broke your foot.
The director, it was the movie's called The Winning Season. It was with Sam Rockwell. It was like a down and out alcoholic basketball player, like ex basketball player who coaches. He ends up coaching a girls' team in a high school in Indiana who is terrible. It's like just the bare minimum amount of girls for a varsity team, and he gets like saddled with them and like hates it. But then, you know, like it's a happy go lucky thing.
I totally remember seeing this back. Yeah.
I love it. I think it's on Netflix. I don't know. but yeah, so I got the audition in like the summer before whatever year of high school, you're like 16. I think like junior year. Yeah. So the summer before junior year, I got the audition and I went in and it was fun, had a good time. Went away to skateboard camp. I went to Woodward Action Sports Camp for like 5 summers in a row. And this one year I was like, you know, I'm going to try to like push myself a little bit, see what else I could do. I was not a very good skateboarder. So I tried to do a trick that I couldn't do. And I fell pretty hard and I broke 3 bones in my foot. And I had to take an hour and a half long cab ride to the nearest hospital because it's in the middle of like Amish country, Pennsylvania, with nothing but cornfields around for miles. So it was just like, yeah. Fast forward after that, I came home.
I'm like feeling your pain.
My God. It was terrible. It was the worst. Because my mom wasn't, like, my parents went around. I was a minor. The camp was not authorized to give me anything stronger than, like, Advil. So I was, like, laying there with, like, and I was laying on the ground and I was like, I felt it break. I, like, heard something in my body, not to get too gross if I haven't already. and I was like, oh, something's broken. I just fucked myself really bad here. And I was like, all right. So I was very much like, please give me something that would not make me feel this anymore. And they were like, sorry, we can't give you anything until your mom is physically here, 3 hours away from New Jersey where we lived, to like sign off on it. So anyway, fast forward after that, I'm in a cast and I find out I have to be in this cast for like a couple months because it was a really bad break. And I get a call from my manager, Shirley Grant, well, Dave at Shirley Grant. And he was like, you have a callback for The Winning Season tomorrow. And I said, great, because I have a broken foot and I have a cast on my foot. So do they still want to see me?
And it's a basketball movie.
It's a basketball movie. I was supposed to like, if it was booked like a week after the callback, because I was the last one cast, I believe, of the basketball team. They were like, you know, you'd have to come in to do basketball boot camp and like learn how to play. And I was like, slight hitch, I can't walk. So I went in and did the callback anyway. They were like, sure, we'll see. The director, James Strauss, was in the room for the callback. And he's like, tell me the story of what happened. I told him. He thought it was hilarious. And he's like, let's just do the scenes. And we did the scenes and did some improv. And it like went really well. And then they called me back to like meet with him and go over some of the stuff in the script. And he was like, that's when he told me, he was like, I want to put you in here, but I don't know, like, we want to write around what happened to you. And I was like, sure, that sounds great to me. Like, he's like, would you be willing to, if, like, shooting continues on after you were supposed to get your cast off, like, could we keep the cast on you for the rest of filming? And I was like, yeah, I'll have, like, a gimp leg for a little longer, like, whatever. So then he offered me the role, and I went in and I shot it, and I didn't have to do basketball boot camp, which was excellent, because I'm a horrible basketball player being 5 feet tall.
Yeah, right?
You know, so, but luckily it actually worked really well with the like plot of this like ragtag team of misfit varsity kids who like none of them in any competitive school would have been on a team. It's just bad. But
it's,
you know,
so true.
Yeah, it was fun. It was wild.
And so you didn't go to college, right?
Yeah, yeah, you're
so
right.
So what? Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Okay. Your face. So what did you do after high school?
That's another good question. I jumped around a bit. I was always like, once I hit like the college application process time, my guidance counselor in school was not the best. He was not great at like, he was like, you have to go to school, you have to do something. And he's like, probably don't do acting though. And I was like, well, okay, I don't. He gave me terrible advice. I was turned off on the whole thing of school, and I kind of felt like I just wanted to jump in to acting anyway, so that's kind of what I did. I figured I would just work at, like, whatever day job I could find until. I think the first day job I had was, like, the same job that I had through high school was working at a pediatrician's office where my mom works. I was filing paperwork and being very bored all day. So it was really not fulfilling at all. And then I moved from there to... I think after there, I interned at Shirley Grant for, like, 6 to 9 months, where they, like, it was a paid internship, and they kind of just called me and were like, we need an assistant. Do you want to try this out for a while? And I said, sure. So I did it. And then at the end of, like, the term that I had signed up for, they said, do you want to stay on, or, like, what's your plan? And I kind of thought, well, I saved up some money. I would like to get back, like, at that point, I hadn't really done too much, like, professional acting and stuff. Did, like, a couple, like, little theater things, like, community theater in Jersey. And I was like, I think I want to try to direct and try to produce something, like, shoot something. So I got together with a couple friends, and we created a comedy web series called Unrelated, a comedy web series. And I kind of took, like, a summer off to, like, write, produce, edit that monster. It was, like, a 12 or 13 episode web series.
Was like, what was the inspiration behind starting that? Was there, you had with a bunch of friends, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my good buddy Nick Jesdan, who's a like film producer extraordinaire, he also from our high school, he and I were sitting around one day and we came up with this idea, and we were like, what if we just like make a web, we just like a little bit, we were kind of bored. And then once the idea kind of grew, we were like, maybe this is something we could do and put some money into and like collect money from some, we got some backers through Kickstarter. Nick ended up not working with the full run of the project. We had done it like one summer before we attempted, and we kind of went in too blind and tried to jump in too quick. We're like writing it while we were shooting it, while we were editing it, and it was just way too much for like a 3-person team. So I teamed up with some other folks, and we like took the year while I was working and while I was interning, and like took that time to like really write the whole series and everything. And then that following summer is when we came back and we were like, now we have the idea fleshed out, we have all the scripts and we have a cast, and we just we shot it. It kind of just came out of like a random idea at some point. That's
awesome. Have you done any other film directing since then?
Directing, no. I did cinematography for a long short, like a summer after that, but I was also working in between and everything. So, but I would love to continue to do that. I still have like my LLC, Hypocrite Films.
Yeah.
We still exist, but we haven't like produced anything in a minute.
So how long have you officially been with Shirley Grant?
As an employee, I'm coming up on 5 years now in October.
Is that including the little internship you did?
Not including this. So okay. There'd be like 5 and change in October. Okay. Then. Because it was like a gap in between. Like after my internship, I went and did the web series, and then
I worked at like a... That's a long time.
Yeah, it is. Like it shocks me actually still.
So why did you decide to go from being the talent part of the talent management to being on the other side of the table? Like what was that kind of motivation?
Yeah, it was another situation where someone was kind of like, do you want to do this? And I said, sure. I've always kind of said yes to anything that seemed like sort of interesting. And I really wanted to, I thought it would be a really good opportunity especially after interning there, I thought it'd be a really good opportunity to kind of get my head around the like business side of it a bit more, since I had grown up with it as a child. You don't see like any of the important stuff. You just like show up on set, like do your lines, like eat some candy and go home. It's not like, it's not really, you don't really get the grasp of it where like you would through like maybe going to school and training and stuff. So I thought this would also be a good way to like learn the business side of things without like enrolling in like a traditional college or something.
And how has your perspective changed being on the other side of it?
It's really interesting because I feel like I have a really good grasp now of like what's expected of performers and what's expected of like the casting process, I guess. Not that we're directly involved in casting, but like I feel like it's cool to see like a lot of the performers that come on to our company that are new, like maybe we have to kind of teach them a little bit, like that's not how the process works. Like we'll have people
because you
who
do
are,
have younger clients.
Totally, yeah.
So they're probably more green.
Exactly. We represent people now. Traditionally, Shirley Grant was mostly kids, but now we represent anybody from age, like we have babies. We have like, I think our oldest client is like in her 40s. Me personally, one of my clients, D-Lo Srijayaraha, he's like, in his, like nearing 42. So yeah, so we have a big span of ages now, but like at any age, at any point, people are coming in either green or like very seasoned and stuff. So it's cool to be able to like look at these folks who are coming in brand new to the business, and maybe we're their first representation, maybe they had been like working through college or something, but now this is like their first like stretch into the professional world. It's kind of cool to be able to say like, here's what you've learned before and here's like how that relates to what really is going to happen in the actual room, or like that kind of way. And being an actor too, it's cool to be able to
coach them a little
bit. Yeah, yeah, like on a more specific level where like some of the other managers and agents maybe were never on the other side of the table, so the same kind of stuff that's going through your head is not like, I feel like I have a unique perspective in that, that I can kind of bridge that gap a bit.
Yeah, so we had a few weeks ago, we had entertainment law person who works in that field on the podcast, and we were talking to him about contracts and how they work with agents and managers for the actors and such. And I'm just curious if, you know, contracts and any of that was something that you were familiar with as an actor. Is that something you came to the table with already, or is that something that you really had to develop as a skill?
That's definitely not something I knew the, like, ins and outs of, and I can't say that I know totally the ins and outs of it now still, because I'm still, like, still learning every day.
Sure.
But I feel like now I have a much better grasp than I did to begin with. Like, back in the day, my mom would sign all my contracts, obviously, when I was a minor. And then, you know, getting, like, once I turned 18, I started reading them over myself. But, you know, kind of just keeping, like, as long as everything looked standard and, like, I trusted my management to, like, have gone through everything ahead of time to know, like, that's what's good or not. But, yeah, I don't know that I would say that I had a ton of experience with that ahead of time. But now I definitely do, and I've actually negotiated a couple smaller contracts on my own, practicing up for the big shit.
Yeah, so so we talked a little bit about this before. Are you considered a manager or an assistant? Because on their website it says you're an assistant still.
Yeah, that's so fun.
It's a weird gray area.
Totally gray area, because I am, like, on paper the assistant, and I do assist both, like, so we're a three-person team. It's me as the assistant, and then Stephanie Artuso, who does commercial and, like, print and voiceover animation and stuff like that. And then Dave McEwen, who does film, TV, theater, and, like, the legit side of things. So I assist both of them very heavily. I work with them day-to-day on, like, just putting out appointments and everything, and, you know, sometimes with the commercial side of things, on, like, the print side, I've been given some stuff where I can create the lists myself and push people myself, and, like, that's all trusted to me. So on paper I'm an assistant, but I have clients that I'm, like, I guess they're, like, main liaison, their main, like, contact point.
And is that your Spectrum division that you created?
Yeah, that's the Spectrum division that I created. I think I created it, like, it was maybe a year and a half into my, like, legitimate term at Shirley Grant, like, once I realized I'm going to do this for a little while and see what happens with it.
And can you explain to anybody who might not know what the Spectrum Division is?
Absolutely. What it is? Yes. So we are, the Spectrum Division specializes in transgender, gender nonconforming, and otherwise queer talent. So we kind of make sure that we are focusing on finding these trans non-binary roles to put our clients into, but also making sure that they're not pigeonholed to just those kind of roles. So we're constantly searching for anything that has that sort of, like, signifier to it, but also we love to create jobs for people that maybe wouldn't have been there before. Like, if we see a breakdown come out and I see something and I say, like, oh, like, someone like my buddy Jack would be great for that, let me put him in, even though the role is, like, scripted. He's a trans man. It's, like, maybe it's scripted as, like, a cis boy, or, like, it's a non-gendered, like, non-specified role, but we want to get them in the room and have casting see, like, there's a person here that you might not have considered before, because on paper you wanted, like, a 25-year-old, like cis man who's straight, but then we bring in, like, a assigned female at birth, like, trans person that comes in and kind of changes that script a little bit. We've actually had some success in, like, changing, like, roles and pronouns and stuff in the script and everything for projects that our clients have booked.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like, how receptive are people to these ideas? Because it's not always, I'm assuming you're talking with casting at that point. Mm-hmm. So it's not always the people that can make the final decision on those kind of things. So how does that relationship work?
Totally. Yeah, they, like, casting doesn't get to make the final decision, but they are very influential a lot of the time. And even to the point where, so, like I said, if we see a breakdown that's calling for one specific thing, we might call them up and say, hey, we have this client who we think would be great for the role. They fit the personality. They fit whatever sort of, like, style of humor or, like, what feeling you are looking for in this piece. And we kind of open up a dialogue and we say, like, you know, and we don't disclose anything about anybody that they're not comfortable with. And we always very much, like, talk everything out when we first meet a new Spectrum client and make sure that everyone's comfortable and, you know, being respected and that we're respecting them and honoring their, like, pronouns and like preferred name and everything like that. So the question I might not have
How receptive have people been to
yes.
it? So you had some successes, which is amazing.
Totally. And it's actually been very cool, too, because we've sort of developed a little bit of a reputation with certain casting directors, especially in the theater world, where they know that we have this list. And it's not a huge list because we are very selective, but we have this list of, like, super talented people that have, like, some of them have been working in the industry for, like, 20 years and everything. And some of them are brand new. Like, we just signed somebody who's, like, just out of college, like, never done anything professional before. And I feel like they've been overall very, very receptive to changing their minds about things, or at least like bringing somebody into the room, even if they're not the one who's going to make the final decision. You know, they'll bring in more people of different varying diversities and stuff to present to the creative team and everything, so that, you know, down the line they could say, you know, we want this and we're going to change the script, kind of thing.
What is your relationship with the casting director in the process of negotiating for a client or getting appointments and stuff like that?
Me personally, with especially with there's certain casting directors that like will call our office and say, hey, we're working on this like all trans production of Hamlet or something, and they'll say like, who do you got for me? And then that way we could sit and break down each person we have that would be right and for which roles and why. And
so yeah. You're only working with the Spectrum division. Those are your only clients. You don't really make any appointments for any of the other clients.
I don't usually have the process of pushing for other clients. Like Spectrum is my specialty, but like overall, like we have like Dave on the theatrical side and Stephanie on the commercial side doing all the pushing for like all the non-Spectrum clients, anybody who's like falls under like a cis het norm of way of thinking. Yeah, but yeah, so but I have done a lot of that like pushing on my own for the Spectrum clients.
I had a question about maybe if you could explain the difference between an agent and a manager and the relationship, because I've heard that kind of thrown out a lot with it, you know, with these conversations and just in everyday normal life. And yeah. I would just love your, I guess, perspective on what the difference is.
It's, I mean, for me, I feel like it is very similar. Do you guys watch BoJack Horseman by any chance?
No.
I don't.
Oh, it's really funny. You should. And I'm going to push okay. I'm gonna push that. You should watch it. It's really funny. I don't have any affiliation with them or anything, but I'm just a huge fan.
BoJack Horseman.
But there's like a whole running joke in that. Like, so BoJack has his manager, Princess Carolyn, or his agent. She starts off as his agent, and then she becomes his manager through whatever, like 5 seasons of show. I'm not going to tell you. but like there's a whole running joke of everybody's always asking her, what's the difference between an agent and a manager? And she kind of doesn't really have an answer for that. But I mean, what I like to say is a manager is more focused on the long term of a career. Not that an agent isn't always thinking ahead, but agents typically have like lists, and they'll put a client on a contract, and a lot of the bigger agencies will say like, all right, if this person hasn't booked something within the 2 years of the contract, we're gonna let them go. Now, as a manager, we have some clients, and especially working with kids, we have some clients who we've had for like 10-13 years and like only booked once, or like very small, like little like $100 podcasting jobs or something here and there. Like not shitting on podcasts, I mean like those like
people
scripted...
get paid to podcast.
Yeah, I mean, oh. Some of those like scripted little like Highlights Magazine has a
scripted
kids podcast.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah,
not
yeah.
interviews. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like,
no,
we didn't
no,
negotiate.
No, don't worry. I'm not going to send you an invoice or anything.
Shade, right?
Not even a little bit. I'm such a podcast listener. I'm like such a fan. But I mean, like, there's like these, or like,
yeah, the
better
narrative
example.
Ones. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Better example, like voiceover jobs for like a Nickelodeon bumper that might pay like $150 for like 2 lines of dialogue or something, or like a print shoot that's like a $50 or $100 thing. We don't really take into account saying like, oh, like this child or this adult has not booked in X amount of time, so we're going to let them go. We try to cultivate a career and build, like, we're more focused on building the relationship. So even if they don't go in and book that job right then, you know, we're building a relationship where like the casting director will say like, hey, is like so and so available? We have like a ton of clients who will just get called for like all these like readings and like stage readings and like short-term productions of shows just by word of mouth and just by knowing the relationship they have with other casting directors and with other productions and stuff like that.
And you've never had an agent yourself, right? You've only had management.
Correct.
So, but sometimes people will have both.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So you're probably working in connection with your clients' agents. So definitely. What is that relationship like?
Definitely, yeah. We work super closely with, that's why I say it's such a similar job too, because we really work in tandem with, like if a client is signed specifically.
You're the team.
Yeah, hell yeah,
when
exactly.
Someone says that's my team.
It's... Yeah, you might have an agent, manager, yeah. publicist, like there's a whole bunch of different like roles you could kind of add on there as you get like the bigger scope of things. They're submitting on jobs, but we're also submitting on jobs. Even if sometimes that means like they're being double submitted or like casting might have a better relationship with the manager and not quite know this one specific agent at an agency as well, or vice versa. Like if an agent has a really good relationship with a casting director, they might take the front reins of something versus like us stepping in and stuff. But yeah, we like to work very closely with the agents.
So when is it appropriate, I guess, or necessary to have both? Or when would you just have one? Is there a rule, like, or is it kind of just fluid?
It's pretty fluid, honestly, okay. Which might be an annoying answer for people who are looking for like a concrete, but it is like, it's very case by case. Like we have some clients who have, like me personally, in the Spectrum division, I have like a couple clients who have not booked a ton, but they have booked like high velocity work and they're signed to an agent. And, you know, in that way, that that's how that falls. But then there's also people who, like, have booked a ton and have worked, like, for years and years, but only have management. And the same with some of my people that I know in the agent business. There's people who, like, have only had agents. So it's really, like, a personal preference. And we, with Shirley Grant, we don't always sign kids right away to an agent unless we see there's like maybe some sort of like high demand or something, or an agent comes to us and it says like, we're looking for a kid who fits this spec, like we don't have someone on our roster like that, are you willing to or interested in like signing them and stuff. So yeah, like it really depends on case by case what the actor wants and what we think is best at the time.
What's an ideal client to work with on your end from your perspective now that you've been on the other side of it?
That's tough. Someone who's always available. That's half kidding. No. I don't know. An ideal client is just somebody who's, for me, when I meet somebody, like I like to have a personal connection with them too. Like doesn't mean we have to be best friends, but I like to be able to like talk to them like on a human level, not just on a business level. Especially with the Spectrum division, it's so much about like personal identity and like nuances that come along with that, and like navigating a very a world that's not always receptive to people of like varying like gender identities and sexualities and stuff like that, which is hard to believe in this business because it's so like ingrained in everything, but
it's a business and the audiences aren't always the ones that are the receptive.
Exactly. Exactly. And when you're working with something like maybe like a studio project or like a big like television show, it's harder to convince people to like take, it's not a gamble in reality, but like they, like from a business standpoint, like the showrunners might feel like, that's a gamble. This is a performer who's excellent and they have never worked professionally before and they are trans and we want to use them, but we don't know that like somebody, like recently this controversy with like Scarlett Johansson coming up with, I don't know if you heard about, there was a movie that she was in talks to play a trans man named Tex for this movie Rub and Tug.
I didn't hear that.
Oh yeah, it was, she was like in talks to play this like prominent in like queer history, I do not remember his last name right now, but his name is, yeah, Tex, and the movie was Rub and Tug, and they would like announce that she was gonna play this character and people were like up in arms, and for a good reason, because she is a cis woman going to play a trans man who she honestly doesn't even look anything like the role. Not to say like actors can't like transform and stuff, but she's like Tex looks more like someone, like he's like a short guy, he's a little bit squat, he's very butch obviously he's a man, and I feel like a lot of people got very up in arms about that. So I forgot the question and I just started rambling.
It's all right.
Yeah, no, it's all right.
So what are some of the ways that you think that people higher up in the industry can be better at accommodating people in your Spectrum division?
Yeah. I just feel like it would be nice if people would be more open to like taking the chance. And like, so if you're casting something where the entire cast is a cis hetero cast except for this one main character, like Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl or something, which, not to knock Eddie Redmayne, but I mean, like, that's like, I didn't see the movie, but the one...
I did love the movie, and I loved the performance. And that's where, I think me as an audience member, sometimes I'm torn.
Yeah, totally. And I'm not to say, there's not to say that it should be any one clear-cut way, I suppose. And especially then, that movie was being made and coming out at around a time, like, before this conversation really started happening.
Exactly, yeah.
So I feel like at the time, that was, you know, what it was. But now it's sort of more, everybody seems to be, not everybody, I'm generalizing, but people seem to be more aware of the need to, like, give trans people a chance to play these roles before just defaulting to someone who you know is going to bring in a big box office, because there's all these other roles in the movie. Like, you can have the Danish girl played by a trans woman, and the rest of the movie can be, like an Eddie Redmayne or, like, whoever, like a giant, like Meryl Streep could play somebody. Like, whoever it is, you could bring in all these gigantic roles as not this main, like, one role for this one marginalized identity.
I should mention, though, that in this movie, it was pre-surgery and all of that.
Yes.
And that was the point of him struggling with actually eventually going for the surgery.
Okay.
Sorry,
okay.
I gave it away.
No,
so
that's all right. That's totally fine. It came out a while ago.
It is a beautiful movie, though.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I could totally see that side of it, too. There's just an abundance of trans talent who, like, maybe they don't have the credits that somebody like an Eddie Redmayne or a Scarlett Johansson would have. But
they're not going to get credits if we're not giving opportunities.
Exactly. And that's the big thing.
And also in terms of acting technique, too.
Right.
Because you're not going to be a seasoned actor as much as Scarlett Johansson, right? Because
yes.
How many movies has Scarlett Johansson done?
Exactly. Because she was given the opportunity to. So I feel like that's one thing that I'm trying to personally advocate for, is to push, and I mean, I'm not anybody huge or something in the management business, even by a long stretch, but my goal down the line is to, like, kind of push people to take that chance and say, maybe this person, I don't know that they're personally going to bring in a million fans or $1 million, but I know that they, from experience and from a personal, deep-rooted emotional standpoint, can play this role and can play the crap out of it. And I want them to say, I'm going to do that, and then I can fill the rest of my cast with these, like, big moneymakers. So to kind of supplement that, if you're worried about, like, the business side of things and everything. But yeah, I think the most important thing is, like, give people a chance to play something that they're going to be good at playing. You got to give them the chance to get the experience and build up their resume before, you know.
Yeah. How does it logistically work for you, being that you're still managed by Shirley Grant and working there?
That's very fun. Well, I'm very lucky because I don't know that other actors who work in, like, an agent or management side of things get to do what I get to do, but, like,
you get to see the breakdowns.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you could be like, hey, I saw this. Please push me, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there are times where, like for example, Dave will say, like, hey, this is a play that's all queer people, and they want people of all different sorts, like, both Dave and Stephanie know that I know the trans talent, like, on a personal level, and, you know, like, I'm gay, so they will say, like, maybe, like, oh, like, do you want to handle this list? And then they've explicitly told me I have the freedom to put myself in to whatever sort of, like, specific things like that I want to. If I'm handling the list, like, they're like, don't be ashamed to, like, put yourself in and push for yourself.
And have you?
Oh, totally.
Oh, it's amazing.
Good. That's
awesome. Yeah, 1,000,000%.
And how does that work, though, if you actually end up negotiating?
Usually to, like, keep the water a little less muddy, Dave will step in and say, like,
good.
Hey, and only recently has he had me, like, even, like, answer the appointments myself to confirm myself, because, like, just to, like, stop the questioning of, like, what's
going on here?
Yeah, like, who is she again? But, like, there's a few casting directors now, like, that I'll go in and see, and, like, they'll be like, oh, like, how is, like, your other clients doing and stuff like that, and we can have this kind of, like, just a different level of a relationship than I think I had before I was working here, and, you know, getting to see everything ahead of time and knowing kind of what's coming down the pipeline as much as any of us can, it's pretty nice. Like, I put myself in the last movie I did, Adam, which is out in theaters right now, but probably by the time this has happened, it's going to be out of theaters, but maybe on streaming, I don't know. But that's a totally queer film. Like, pretty much everybody in the cast and crew was queer or trans or gender nonconforming or non-binary or what have you. And I got to do that breakdown mostly, and I got to put in my clients but also myself, and then I ended up booking a role in the film, and yeah, it's totally awesome because it's a very weird experience to get to do that for yourself and like get the role.
Have you had the opportunity to work with any of your actual clients?
Yes, actually, in Adam, my client Jack Bernhard, who's also like become a good buddy of mine, like he and I both auditioned for this, and I had read the book a few years ago because it's based on a book by Ariel Schrag, and I'd read the book a few years ago, and I was like, I feel like we could get this because of the tone of it, the comedy of it, the like weird like nuanced queerness of it. I just felt like I got the call that I booked it, and then I got to call him and say, hey, guess what, you booked it and we're gonna be in this movie together.
Aww.
We didn't have any scenes together, but like we've been doing all the press and everything and all the like screenings and everything, hanging out together, and it's been weird and
that's
awesome.
That's so unique.
Yeah, actually too, I knew one other person in that film like before I got there, and my fiance's uncle is an actor, Scott Zimmerman, he's great. Hire him. He called me like maybe a week after I had started shooting. I worked 3 days in the film, and it was like a week after my first day. And he's like, hey, I just booked this role playing a dad in a scene in this movie City Summer. That was the working title at the time. And he's like, do you know anything about that? And I said, dude, that's Adam. That's the movie I've been telling you about, because he like we coach each other, like we do our tapes together and stuff. And I was like, that's the movie I've been telling you about for, like, weeks that I, like, auditioned for and stuff. And he's like, oh, I just booked Adam's dad. So, like down the line.
I got chills.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was so weird. Very
Family
strange.
Affair.
Literally. And then I got to set, like, the next day that I was on set, our director, Reese, came up to me and he's like, your uncle-in-law, like, worked the other day? And he says hello. And I was like, yeah, he told me to tell you hello, too. It was great. It was so weird. It was awesome. And, yeah, we both have, like,
that's
a good,
so
like,
cool.
laugh moment in the movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you, but have you ever worked with your siblings because they were child actors too?
Surprisingly, not on a professional level, but I've like whenever I was like making videos as a kid, I was throwing them into everything.
South Pacific
like,
too, right?
Yeah, hell yeah, my oh that's Cassidy, right, I totally yeah. forgot. Sorry, Cass, I forgot Cassidy was in South Pacific with yeah, totally. Oh, and so then I guess in that capacity in high school theater, my brother Steven was in Death of a Salesman,
right?
And he was also had a bit in The Producers, which I was in both of those too.
Definitely the water. There's something definitely
it's weird.
In that water.
It's really weird. We all three also have been on Law & Order SVU at different points, but like not like we haven't interacted with anything like on screen together.
That's so funny.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's really weird.
So I had a question about your thoughts on the industry and what could they do to, I guess, provoke or encourage the conversation of inclusivity?
That's a great question too. I don't know. I feel like theater is a lot farther along in that than film and TV, but, you know, film and TV are making strides, but...
Yeah, so. No, I was going to say, why do you think that is? Like, why is theater farther along on that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I have a thought. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you can target your audience based on location with theater.
Yeah.
And I think that, especially in New York, it's very liberal in a lot of idealized ways.
Yeah.
Whereas for TV and film, I think you're hitting a larger audience and you can get a little more general about things and play it a little safer.
Yeah, totally. And a lot of times with TV and film, like you're almost forced to play it a little safer because of that like broader audience outreach. Like the more people who are seeing your stuff, unfortunately, on like the higher up level, people are saying, well, a lot of people are going to be seeing this, or we hope a lot of people are going to be seeing this, and we want to make it appeal to a broad audience. So like somebody in middle America who might not be accepting of any LGBTQIA type people might not want to watch something like Rise, which had a trans character, you know, like things like that. Yeah, I think that's exactly the reason why theater is a lot farther ahead. And I think also I've just felt like a lot of theater stuff is more flexible. Like we've had to do less pushing. More theater productions that I've found are like open and like excited about it. Like I know there's a lot of theater companies right now that are specifically gearing up trans projects and things like that. Like I know The Public does, like I had a client a year or two ago in a production over there called Masculinity Max, and it was like I'm pretty sure the whole cast was like queer, trans in some sort of way, like LGBTQIA. And yeah, it's I just feel like that company specifically, along with many others whose names I can't remember right now off the top of my head, but are like really pushing for finding projects that are specific to trans people to like create these roles, and also queering the script, as like I like to say, like taking something and saying, well, this is like a tradition, like Oklahoma is something that's very traditional, but what if like the leads are trans, or what if like we make it gay, you know, kind of something like doing productions that like queer the script and flip it and say, fuck it, let's see what it feels like this
way.
Yeah,
and in terms of TV, I mean, immediately I think of Pose right now.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And that's doing a fantastic job of including people.
And it's employing, like, yeah, it's employing most of, like, the whole, yeah,
it feels
everybody.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, I feel like, I might be incorrect on this fact, but, like, the crew even is, like, like, they employ the most trans people on TV now. I think Transparent had that before, but I think now Pose employs the most trans and queer people, like, in a crew standpoint, too.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's excellent.
I almost hate to say this, but I always think of, like, the actors in that instance of, like, making sure that the opportunities are there for trans people and also for anyone in that community. Yeah. But I never think about the crew or the back, like, behind the scenes.
Totally.
And that's, those people are, you know, everyone is interested in all areas.
And beyond
so
theater.
Well, of course. Well, I mean, no, I was thinking specifically TV because I hardly ever think of TV because I hardly ever watch it. So it's always like an enigma to me. But it's so important to offer those job opportunities to everybody and not have it be one way or the other.
It's
so
true. And on a lot of sets that are led by like a cis hetero like team, like from whatever level that may be, like the director or, you know, producers and things, like up until now, it's not something that's on the forefront of people's mind to say, like, diversity, inclusion. Like, we're going to make sure that a certain percentage of our crew are people that are, you know, disenfranchised in some way. But I feel like lately, and hopefully, like, it continues to grow this way, a lot of productions are saying, oh, well, we want to make sure that there are, like, a certain amount of people who identify as something other than, like, the cishet norm. Of like what you would see,
like
on,
they're
like,
going out of their way.
Totally,
you see
yeah.
that more often.
Yeah, like reaching out, like specifically, I can only speak for the things that I've personally worked on, but specifically with Adam, I know that Reese and the producers all felt very, very strongly that not only should any role in the film play that's specified as a certain identity be played by somebody who like closely can relate to that identity, they also felt like to ensure the safest possible space for something that, like, the movie's a little bit controversial, and to ensure the safest possible space for everybody involved, like, as many possible people behind the scenes that are also, like, of a marginalized identity, to make sure that, like, everybody kind of
feels safe.
Yeah. Feels safe and is more receptive and sensitive to needs, like, of LGBTQIA people.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So I think we have a lot of actors that listen to this podcast, and so I'm interested to, I think that they would be interested to hear from your standpoint what you at the office looks for in prospective clients and how that process works.
Yeah. Well, it all starts usually with either we're referred people either by like a word of mouth, like they know somebody who's with us or they know somebody who worked with us in the past and they reach out and say like, we're interested in representation. We try not to bring in too many people of the same, like, typecast because we don't want to be spreading ourselves too thin and not be able to fully push ourselves into, like, each client's
career. The people you've
already
invested in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if somebody submits to us and at that moment we have, you know, like if somebody submits to us and we have somebody who fits, like, we have, like, three guys that kind of look similar or, like, have the same, like, comedy style or whatever it might be, we might say, we'll hold off on you for now and maybe, you know, just focus on the clients that we have. So from the submission process, we're really just looking for filling the gaps in our roster. And it's not like we're like trying to put a puzzle together or something, but we are going to look more closely at people who are submitting to us that like are like something different that we haven't seen before.
Standing out.
Yeah, something that we don't already represent because we don't want to, like I said, we don't want to bring on like two or three guys or two or three people that are the same type because There's only so many jobs out
right.
there, and it's hard enough to get the clients out there. So we want to make sure anybody we're bringing in, we're able to put 100% into them. Mm-hmm. So from there, just when you come in for the meeting and stuff, we always want someone who we feel like we could vibe with, who is open to hearing our feedback on things, because you'd be surprised, like, a lot of green people might come in and, like, we would say, like, oh, are you open to this, that, or the other thing? Or I don't have an example in front of me, but, like, we might say, like, well, what are your goals in this? And if they have an idea for themselves that's not quite what is realistic, we might say, you know, it's not the right fit or something. But overall, we just want someone who's going to come in, who's going to you know, have the talent, who's going to vibe with us as people, and just, you know, make sure that we work well together, because at the end of the day, we're talking to these people every day, and we want to make sure it's somebody who's going to be, you know, just as excited to work with us as we are to them.
And you hear that, you hear that so often, mm-hmm. too. People just want people that they can talk to.
Yeah, totally.
And spend time with.
Exactly.
And have a good relationship.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because it is so much back and forth, like, yeah.
Yeah. So what are your goals, and where do you see yourself in your career, either with Shirley Grant or beyond, in the next, like, 5 years or so?
I would love to continue acting, because that's always been my number one passion. That's what got me into, like, this whole other side of the business and everything. So goals with that, I would just love to, like, keep doing what I'm doing, and, you know. And with management, I'm, like, I just want to keep growing the Spectrum division, in that I want to, like, make sure the clients that I have are happy and healthy and keeping their shit together, and, you know, getting in front of the casting directors that either they haven't met before or that they have good relationships with, and just kind of, I don't know. I guess I don't really have, like, a solid 5-year plan or something. I'm a little bit of a floater.
You're going to be getting married soon.
Yes, yeah.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah. Congrats. That's happening in the personal life. Yeah, I'm excited about that. We've been engaged for a minute, so it's sort of like Michelle's finishing grad school. She graduates in December, and then we're going to figure it out from there. But, yeah.
And then I guess where do you hope the industry goes, you know, as we move forward? I mean, we've already started to see some, I would say, the industry has already progressed in a lot of ways, but there's still so much room to grow. And so where would you love to see the industry go?
Totally.
TV, any of it?
Theater. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like you said, it's growing and is continuing to grow. And I love to see the excitement to be educated. I really want that to continue, and I want more people other than just the same people who have been very receptive to, like, differences. I would love to start broadening horizons, like, outside of that little bubble, kind of, outside of maybe, like, the New York theater world or what have you. But, yeah, I would love to see more trans actors in more trans roles, in queer roles, and I want everything to be queer, and, like, I want, yeah. Not to say there's not room for cis hetero people, but I would, you know, you had your turn. Let us step up to the plate a little bit more.
We always ask our guests as a final question, what was the last great piece of theater that you saw?
Oh, I love that question. I'm going to plug, I guess it's not really a plug because it's over, but a client of mine, Ryland Taylor, super talented trans guy, he was in a play, it was part of a series of plays called Brain Food, and it was, I cannot remember what theater it was in. It was this really cool, it was like Brunch Theater Company did it. And so they had, like, you walked in and it was, like, set up, there was, like, a little stage set up, and it was in this, like, really cool space in Brooklyn. They had, like, bleacher seating, but they also had, like, they had, like, a breakfast buffet, so you could get, like, French toast and, like, coffee and stuff while you're watching the show. But the whole
that
show
sounds like my dream.
Oh my
honestly
God. It was awesome.
I love breakfast
in.
Food.
Yeah, yes, hell yeah.
Was it in the morning?
Yeah, it was. Okay, cool. It was,
but
great.
You don't need it to have breakfast food in
no.
the morning.
All day. No. They had like wine and stuff too. They had, like, little cocktails and things, but it was, like, really, really cool. And before the show, there was, like, music happening, and it was very much like a mixer. Like, people were talking to each other. Like, it was just very different type of theater. And then when the actual show came on, like, it was a whole mix of, I don't remember how many plays were featured, but there was, like, a certain number of plays, and they were all, like, little mini, like, vignettes. And each one had a different focus of a different aspect of mental health and struggle. So it was really cool. Like, they touched on, like, eating disorders and depression and anxiety. And I went to see my client Rylan in this production, and then I met a new client at the production, Jake Murphy, who's also awesome. And that was really great, because they also had on-site therapists. Even if you just, like, were curious about therapy and, like, had some struggle beforehand or, like, whatever, there were people in the back of the theater, like, throughout the whole show and afterwards. They were licensed therapists there to sit and talk to you and kind of, like, work through whatever you were feeling, or just to give you information on, like, starting a therapy journey of your own, like, outside of the theater. So I thought all of those aspects together in, like, this one, like, 2-hour, like, theater, like, immersion piece thing, it was so fucking cool. And I really enjoyed that. And I think that's coming back around, but they haven't set the dates or anything like that yet. I know Rylan mentioned to me that he was reached out by the director, and they said they're going to be bringing it back in some capacity. So
now breakfast food sounds so good.
I know, right? Like, I want, like, a French toast right now so bad. Like a big waffle.
And we're recording this at, like, 8:30 at night. So.
P.M., yeah. Hey, but you can have it anytime. Yeah.
You can.
We're going to start our new podcast.
Yes, I love it.
brunch. Just, that's it. Because I could brunch every day.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Thanks so much, Mel, for coming.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Doing this conversation.
It was so much fun.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
And if you're enjoying these conversations, we would really appreciate it if you could take a couple minutes to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.